be podcast. Don't be podcast.
Well, don't now podcast. Is the time for the Don't Be Podcast. When you call in and don't hold all your life on blast. And you call in and talk about your past. Because your life was curious, hardcore and fast. So now is the time for the Dopey Podcast.
Dopey Podcast.
It's the Dopey Podcast. The Dopey Podcast, yo. This is the Dopey Podcast. This is the Dopey Podcast. Now if your life was furious, hardcore and fast, you feel like you have to put your life on blast, just call up the show and I talk about your past. Cause now is the time for the Dopey Podcast.
Dopey Podcast.
It's the Dopey Podcast. The Dopey Podcast, yo. This is the Dopey Podcast. This is the Dopey Podcast. Who must say hard and pull up? Yes, I stay strong, Dopey Nation. Yes, all of my brethren and my sister in and out of recovery. Give thanks for the most high power. Yes, I. Rastafari. Peace and love.
This episode of Dopey is brought to you by Aloe Recovery. Located in southern, sunny California, smack in the middle of Malibu and Silver Lake. I think they have a house someplace else, if I'm not mistaken. Aloe sounds, if I was all fucked up on drugs, Aloe sounds like the place I would want to go. Crazy good staff, clinical director Dr. Dina Mannion, with 3 decades of experience treating addiction and mental health disorders, multidisciplinary care team with a psychiatrist, master's and doctoral level therapist to treat co-occurring and underlying mental health problems, including severe mental illness and dual diagnoses. They, very importantly, they use state-of-the-art pharmacology for their detox, making clients as comfortable as possible, which is really very important. The amenities are off the hook. Fucking surfing, horseback riding, sweat lodge, and that incredible sound bath meditation. I think I could use a sound bath in the attic. Most importantly, Aloe Recovery is created by our friend Bob Forrest and his friend Evan Haynes and their friend Bob. And what they wanted to do is put together a place that treated addicts with respect. And from what I hear, it's true. I have a friend who's out there right now, and he says that the ad is incredibly legitimate. So if you hear this ad and it sounds like a place you want to go and you want to get clean in California, check out Alan. And here's the show. Hello, and welcome to Dopey, the podcast about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. And my name is Dave, and we have a treat for you this evening. We said he was going to come back, and he's back. Last time he was here, it was a cliffhanger where he was getting a colonoscopy. The great Ashley Hamilton. Welcome back.
Your intro was fantastic.
You like it?
Yeah, until you hit my name, then it's all downhill.
Are you kidding me? The feedback from the first Ashley Hamilton Dopey was just off the charts, and everyone wants to know, how was the colonoscopy?
Well, thank you. I'm a Dopey with low self-esteem, so thank you. the colonoscopy was, after it was over, I just said to the doctor, I'm like, how much would it cost you this once a week?
Yeah, so, it was intimate. It was an intimate connection between you and said doctor.
No, it was funny. They just couldn't. They actually had to take so long to get it because they couldn't find a vein on me. So, like, the process went way longer, and then they had to fucking tilt me upside down so they could, like, you know, hit the vein in the neck.
No way.
Don't let me do that.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So, your veins were collapsed, and they had to hit your neck?
Yeah.
Wow. That's like got to be some sort of flashback feeling, right?
Yeah, after the 7th try, I'm like, yeah, let me do it. Except I was never really hanging upside down, I don't think.
Right. You never, I could see you as that kind, that like, you know, those super fit dudes who like hang upside down with the gravity boots and like swing and do fucking crunches upside down. You've never done that?
No, bro.
Dude, you should be strong. You should be doing that stuff. Why aren't you doing that stuff? I could totally see you doing that.
It's too hard, man.
Yeah.
It's too hard. I'm trying to get away from the 12 reps and into the 12 steps. Bump, bump. This thing on. Try the meatloaf on the way out.
Very nice. What was I going to say? Did they give you drugs for that colonoscopy or no?
You know, I'm so bummed out because everybody says they're going to give you fentanyl. They're going to give me fentanyl. I'm like, yes, fentanyl. Do whatever you want with my bunghole. Fentanyl. You know, like, and then they're like, no, you don't get that. You just get the regular, you know, anesthetic. They give you, I guess, some Michael Jackson juice or whatever. That just knocks
that profanol. Profanol.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, like, why everybody else gets fentanyl.
Well, I mean, maybe they knew your history. Did they know your history?
Yeah, because it's at UCLA, so they know my history for sure.
And did you ever get to, like, seek out fentanyl, like, specifically?
What do you mean?
Like, I don't remember in your story, like, were you ever able to just cop fentanyl? Like, was that something you could get?
Oh, man, so before it became all the rave, right? Or all the rage, which one is it, rave?
It's the rage. Not the rave. Yeah, you party and dance at the rave, but when something... The rage. It's all the rage. Yes. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, all the rave.
Fuck you.
I'm just messing with you, bro. I'm just... Yeah, it's all the rage. Before, like me on steroids.
Before fentanyl started killing everybody...
Yes. So I had a doctor and... doctor owned a pharmacy, and it was connected very close to where he was. So there was secret passages all around, and you could just go give him some cash and be like, okay, I want 10 mils of fentanyl, 10 mils of dilaudid, 10 mils of morphine, just in case you get sick, you know, whatever. And even the old school Demerol was kind of fun to do once in a while. But the dilaudid and the fentanyl was my favorite. The fentanyl was just so fast acting. It was like crazy. So I remember I had a friend come to my house too. He wanted to get high and try it a little bit. And he, you know, I'm like, man, this is kind of different. His career is really going. He's somebody in the business, and I'm not going to give him up. But like,
was it Anthony Kiedis?
No. Okay. And so I'm like, okay. And so he's cool at the place. And then he goes, oh, just give me a little bit more so I can take it to go. I'm like, okay, bro. And then I guess I hear in the news he like OD'd, and his wife called the like paramedics, and he was fine, thank God. But yeah, man, it's just, you know, you never know who you're harming besides yourself, you know.
So you gave this musician some fentanyl to go.
Not say he was a musician, but yes.
Okay, and he OD'd.
Somewhere around there.
Whatever. And he OD'd, wow.
He had great hair and could hit his mark and got paid a lot of money for it, so let's just leave it at that.
All right, I'm not going to ask. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole of asking
you
who it is.
It's not Danny DeVito.
It's not Danny DeVito, but he did, you know, he did hit his marks, Danny. What was I going to say?
That's our problem, right? We always overshoot the mark.
Yeah, fucking.
I said for a second, I'm like, forget these, like, at one point in my life, I was like, forget these, like, you know, freaking sober coaches and all this stuff and sober companions. Like, I want to just, like, the rightish amount companion who's like, okay, I'm going to shoot this up for you, but it's not going to, like, you're going to be able to show up for work, but still have a really good time, and you're not going to, like, overhit the mark, you know? So that didn't really work out. But that's how great my thinking is when I'm using.
Right. I mean, that was something that me and Chris always talked about was not, I mean, that's a funny idea, the just okay, just a little high companion.
Yeah.
Like, not the sober companion and not the...
No, the sober-ish. The sober-ish companion. So, you gotta keep it together.
We always wanted to have a place, like, we were at rehab, and we were like, well, why isn't there just a place to go and do drugs? You know what I mean? Like, the opposite of rehab. Like, a place where...
Amsterdam.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean like a Club Med kind of thing, where it's a facility that makes sure... Well, but they don't make sure you live. They don't, you know, you can die in a facility. You could get high. It would be like one of these heroin using, whatever you call it, in these you know, these places where you go and you can use dope. That was just, you know, something me and Chris always daydreamed about. But when you were fucking copying pharmaceuticals, how long a period of that was that, like, possible? Like, you weren't on the street copping dope or whatever.
So, quick side note. So, funny enough, like, you know, you'd say, like, oh, in the hospitals or wherever, where they could, like, you know, revive you or whatever, make it a nice setting, you know? And so at one point, many different points, but this one time, I had endocarditis in my heart and gangrene in the arms. And so I was walking down the streets. I don't know if we've talked about this. I was walking down the streets and all my glands started blowing up and stinking and like exploding. I was like, oh, I have HIV from all the used needles. And anyway, it wasn't that. It was endocarditis. And it was making me really sick and it's dangerous. I'd be in a PICC line to your heart, you know, and in the hospital for a month. So I had that same logic, and I would just have the dealer come there, and I would shoot speedballs right to the heart for like a month. And I'm like, well, if I overshoot the mark, I'm going to be okay, you know?
Shooting speedballs in the hospital, I mean, that's a safe place to get high.
Oh, yeah, and then they caught on to me, and so I shot my last 3 grams of coke into the IV saline drip, you know? And then, because they're never going to check that, you know, before they confiscate everything. And then they're like, we're giving this guy all these meds, and nothing's changing. Respiratory rate's fucking up, you know, through the roof and everything. You know, they couldn't figure it out.
How did you put the coke?
I was riding that edge the whole time where you're like, I'm going to die. You know, when you, like, find too much coke. Like, I'm going to die. Oh, God, please help me. And then you're like, oh, thank you, God. All right, let's do another one. But there, it's like full time because you don't have to worry about dying.
Right. First question is, how would you get it when you were in the hospital? Who would bring it?
Oh, I figured out shift change between all the nurses and stuff, you know, and so I figured out what time the shift change was. I'd have the man come and just come up real quick and do it when he was doing their paperwork and switching over with notes and everything.
Okay, well, that's very convenient.
If I could have done this stuff for something good in my life, my God.
Right? Yeah. And when you put the coke into the drip, did you shoot the bag up? Like, did you puncture the bag with the needle and add the...
Well, it was the orange cap, you know, so it's so thin, you can't see it at the top, so it's not, like, coming out leaking in the bottom. You put it at the top, and it leaks slowly over time, you know?
Amazing. I like that.
And they have, like, they have Valium and Dilaudid in the other drips, so it's all kind of equaling out, you know? I mean, cocaine's taking a little more effect, but you have something, so you're probably not going to die.
So it's like a slow ball instead of a speed ball when you have the Dilaudid drip and the coke drip.
So it's a slow burn ball.
That's funny. That's funny.
So at one point, yeah, when I was trying to pull it together, and then I thought the great idea, well, like, you know, especially traveling, when it's travel for work a lot and you're going to TSA, it just gets to be really hard in the new cities that's a cop. And so I found a doctor that could prescribe it to me, put my names on it, and have a syringe so I could just go shoot up and be wherever I wanted anytime and not worry about any problems, customs, anything, you know. Which may sound like, oh, God, that's so great. But the truth is, like, when you start losing that thing of having to get more drugs and you have a bunch of drugs available, like at times in my life when you just, you know, there's no, like, we wake up now and we think about our day and go, oh, I gotta do this, go to laundry, oh, I can't go, so I'm gonna kill myself, I can't do all this stuff. But when you got caught, man, you know, talk about, like, smart feet and just do the right thing in front of you. It's like you just do it and you get it done. It's like the animalistic primal drive, you know, and that was something, like, I really kind of missed in life, is that drive just to get it done. You're not in your head, it's gonna get done, you know, like, and so like that's where it kind of gets eventually, you know, and the copying, all this stuff just gets less, you know, especially now because they have, you know, dealers and stuff. And back when I was a kid, they had that, but it was you go downtown more than anything because all the dealers, you know, stop at 9 anyway, right? So, you know, it gets to the point, is, you know, like you're slamming and then you're like sick 4 hours later, so you can't even get through a night, you know, it gets to that point, you know, and then it's just like, then when it finally stops working, the phone's not calling, you have one arm that works, that you know, because after that gangrene, I was in a coma for 5 days and lost a side of my body, and my arm especially, all the nerves died because deserves to die.
And that was following following an overdose, right?
Yeah, that was a separate time. Yeah, that was in London. And then, you know, and that was intentional. I don't want to wake up after that one. I was so tired. You know, just get to that place where you're just so tired, and now you're in the same pain you were before you picked up, but you're strung out like a beast, and it's not working, and no connection. And so I just wanted to, like, it wasn't like a, hey, this is a call for help. This is like, I'm so done, you know. And then you wake up, and you're like, oh God, bummed, you know, like so bummed. And the walls just close in on you. And I was in a community hospital in Chelsea, Westminster, which means at the time there's no air conditioning. It was the dead of summer, five people in this room, and we were just like dying. And I was like, it doesn't matter, I'm going to get out of here, go cop right now. And I tried to get up to move, and my left side wouldn't move at all. I'm like, what's wrong? I tried to will it move, nothing. And then they finally explained to me, like, they had to pick me up and put me in bathtubs because that happened. My leg came back quicker, but my arm took 3 years, were completely atrophied, so all you saw was bone, not a finger move, not a thumb, nothing. I'd have to have it in a sling, otherwise it would, like, you know, just fall down. And it's like, you think, okay, that's bottom, I'm gonna stop, but there I am in the mirror, like, plopping that arm that doesn't work between my chin and my leg, so it's properly positioned to then, like, slam, you know. It just doesn't stop, so you just hope you're gonna die. And you know, thank God it doesn't end that way, but, like, I understand that. I understand that pain, man, where it's just, like, all you want to do is die, and people are going, you're going to die, and you're like, promise when.
So what, you know? So what changed? You know, you're coming up on a year, right? When's the year coming?
Yeah, but that time was 5 years, you know? Like, oh, yeah, and then 5 years later, you're like, well, maybe I was just overreacting. Maybe I can just smoke crack like a gentleman, or
right. But I'm talking about, I'm talking about now. You know what I mean? Like, now.
Yeah, so here's what's happened. So now, like, now on the 10th, I think it's the 8th, but I actually think it's the 10th. I gotta look, the actual date is the year, right? So, which is great because it's been over 10 years. I've actually had a year back, even though
the 10th of April. The 10th of April. Okay.
Yes.
What was the 10th of April or the 8th or the 9th? Because I have the same problem with my sober date. I don't remember if it was the 13th.
Checking in. Yeah. I was in a detox first for a certain amount of time, for a few weeks, and then a treatment center. And, you know, it's all blurry.
What was the last run? The last run?
Yeah, it's bad. I can probably tell, like, part of it, but it was, it's gotten to that point where my brain just can't handle it at this age. So when you throw in those type of opiates, and now especially the benzos in the mix, I can't tell you what happens. I end up either arrested or in detox, having no idea what just happened, and it's usually never good, you know. It's sheer luck. It's sheer luck, you know. And I used to think, oh, I'm smarter, I know how to do this, but I don't, you know. It's just seconds and inches, right? So where your life changes forever and you think it's bad, and then you realize, shit, this is the rest of my life, you know. But the problem is, when you've relapsed like I have, there's never a safe time anymore. And you're not in the magical thing when you first come into AA where they'll tell you, like, okay, first year's like this, second year's like this, third year's like this, fourth year's like this, fifth year, your head comes out of your ass. I'm like, but I had the 5 years already, and 4 years, and 3 years, and 2 years. And that's not true. Everybody's different, you know. I feel like it gets mild to be, if you're not living life on your wildest dreams and all this stuff, then something's wrong with you. And
right,
you're not fucking doing it right. And that's just BS, man. Like, what we're promised is a daily reprieve. One day, that's it. That's it. Nothing more than that. It doesn't talk about, like, you know, cash and prizes and all this other stuff. You know, and I just have to remember, like, on a daily basis, is that good enough? Is today good enough? You know, like, because it can't be about, oh, failures or successes I have, or where am I at now? It just has to be, like, from today till tonight. And I will tell you, man, like, you know, I was kind of on the fence about the whole Suboxone thing, you know. And when I was just in Portland for a week, man, my whole view really shifted in a way of where I, you know, like, you know, certain cities, L.A., where we go, we know where to go to get all that stuff and where the dope fiends are. And, you know, and unfortunately, the homelessness, which is getting worse. But you kind of know there it's every single part of every area, no matter what neighborhood. I mean, people ODing on the streets, I saw them in the markets, syringes everywhere. And I just, you start feeling like it's the first time in my life where it didn't really look good to me, like, oh, I could just check out and shoot some dope on the streets. I really felt like the pain and suffering we go through when we're in it, you know. And like, I just start thinking, you know, Suboxone's great to get people like stabilized and back to like a normal life, because what I saw was like, you know, disastrous. And what bothers me is just the movement of, okay, well, let's, you know, they're we call them houseless now, and they can be wherever they want. Okay, fine, but like, we're not helping them. We're not helping their mental health, which is suffering from their addiction, by spending millions on military stuff and just saying, oh, they're fine if they're here in the streets, they can be what they want. That's not helping them.
You mean like houseless as opposed to homeless? Like, that's like,
yeah, that's a new liberal like thing you have to say, you know. And regardless of all
where does that even come from? Houseless instead of homeless, like, because it's like everybody has a home. What does it even mean?
I don't know. That's just what the new like PC lingo you have to say, or you offend somebody or something.
And you're saying in the past you would be in a town like Portland where you'd see heroin everywhere, and you might be like, I could see dipping out and getting high with these junkies or whatever. And now you see just fucking misery, is what you're saying.
Yeah, streets and dope and escaping life and just being out there, you know, like, it used to look good, you know, and until it's been a while and you're in it, and then you realize how terrible it is. But now I just, it wasn't even like a judgment, because I find us addicts to be so judgmental in the aid towards other addicts, and I just saw, like, just the pain and suffering and lack of help, you know. And what's unfortunate about the whole thing is it really is a mirror to our society and who the whole society has become, you know. And it's terrible, because it's just, we're becoming less and less compassionate, right? Like, you know, love and tolerance is our code and stuff, and we're becoming more, less and less compassionate. We're too involved in like pictures on social media, and I've been guilty of that, and ourselves, and how we look, because it's got to look great on the outside, you know, everywhere for people, nothing about on the inside. And these people, neither one, they're struggling, you know. I just wish there was a way we stopped spending money with the war on drugs, because that's an endless freaking joke that we know there's so much conspiracy and propaganda in that, getting drugs on the streets by whatever government agency needs to, that, like, stop the war on drugs, and let's just start the war on mental illness and addiction, and start treating people, because it's never going to get better. It's just going to continue, you know. And it's really, it's sad for what I see, you know.
You sound like Dr. Drew, Ashley. You should fucking get with Dr. Drew and fucking run for office or some shit.
No, it's just, listen, I come from as an addict, and
I'm just playing, man.
I'm just saying, but from the like, abuse as addicts as we like go through in our childhood and all the stuff, there's a part of us that's like, just, you know, we dissociate, and like, for me at one point, like, you know, nothing would faze me, no matter what I saw, what would happen, just so cut off and numb to everything, because that's my only survival skill too.
Well, chill for a second, because like, I think this is,
right now.
Huh? Well, I think this is interesting. I think, because to be totally plain, whoever doesn't know who Ashley Hamilton is, Ashley is, he was born into, you know, United States celebrity, you know, basically. Your father was a big time actor, George Hamilton. Who was your mother? I don't know who your mother was exactly. Who was your mother?
Alana Stewart,
who was married to, you know, one of the great frontmen, great songwriters, great singers of rock and roll, Rod Stewart. And Ashley came up in this fucking crazy, you know, tug of war between two families, crazy money, crazy, you know, access to everything. And you know, it must be a difficult way to come up. You know, it can't be like the, it's, I mean, maybe for some people it's a blessing, but I don't think it was necessarily a blessing for you.
I guess, you know, it's all really in perspective, because there's a lot of people out there who've had it so much worse.
Of course.
Than I have, but like, it's like the Buddha saying, like, all beings are suffering, right? So if we don't have proper parenting and those kind of skills, you know, for self-care and ourselves growing up, then it gets really hard to do that. And so and this is not a poor me story whatsoever, you know, like I have some good family members, you know, and you know, and you start to realize once you become a father too, everybody's just trying the best they can. But I keep everything in awareness, because, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunities that I had that I fucked up myself, you know, so I have nobody to blame for that. And that was, I never felt I could handle it or worth it, you know. And so,
you never thought you were worth what you were born into, you're saying?
Well, just because that kind of family is so right. Like, so, you know, our brain pathways are just like those ages we're growing up is just forming, and what we see around us is what we process into later on in our lives, right? So you see women, you know, your mom with these extremely successful, except, you know, the top in their profession, you know, and so you start seeing, especially in LA, you start seeing a lot of that going, oh, that equates to love, so I must have all of this to then be okay, right? Because already we have that fucking not part of not feeling okay with ourselves as addicts, you know, and so you start like mixing that in, and the bar sets so high that no matter what we do or what I do, I always feel like a constant failure no matter what it is, right? So like, okay, great, I've written some hits for some big bands, great, not enough, look at me, you know, like, okay, right. I did some movies, look at my career, nothing, you know, like, and just that constant like shame and not feeling good enough and trying to get out of it. And that's where I believe, like, once the program comes in, so it's, you know, shifting that perspective, you know, and you also start realizing that was the thing that I felt so uncomfortable. I mean, I felt so uncomfortable always in that setting and around those people for some reason. I just crawled on my skin, and I was so much more comfortable with fucking dope fiends and hanging out away and being able to be myself and not having something follow me or preconceived notion of what they think it's going to be or how you're going to be.
I grew up in, you know, basically in the opposite situation. I grew up, you know, in middle class Jewish apartment in Manhattan, and I had a very like strong group of friends, you know, as kid. But as soon as I left home, as soon as I went to college, I felt exactly the same way. And I felt like I needed to hide out, and I felt like I couldn't be comfortable unless I wasn't fucking cognizant. You know what I mean? I needed to put shit.
And that's what I'm trying, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm trying to say that's what's so relatable about all of us. If you're from a small town and your father's the town sheriff, you share that same thing and that same feeling, you know? It just because it's magnified bigger because of some photographs, but it's like we all share that, you know. We try to look at people differently, and oh, they don't understand, but we all have these feelings inside that we all relate to, you know. And that's why I love Dope Fiends, because I feel like we all come together because we share this thing inside that's all common. We all have it together, you know.
Right, this oblivion seeking shelter kind of thing.
Now
what I was going to though was you went to Portland. It wasn't a pleasure trip. What happened to the audio? It got all fucked up.
Yeah, I went outside to have a cigarette. I started again, but is that going to mess it up?
No, it's okay. We'll get used to it.
I don't want to screw everything up for you.
Please, if you knew how high tech Dopey was, I mean, yeah. No, dude, you can stay outside. Don't worry about it. You wouldn't believe the kind of shit we deal with on the show.
I'm like, hold on, let me just put down the pipe really quick. Give me 2 seconds. Do you hear that?
What is that?
Exactly.
Is that the ocean or the highway?
It's the traffic in LA on Wilshire Boulevard.
Right on. Did you watch Motley Crue the Dirt?
I just, man. So here's the thing. It's so great. Like, I saw different reviews on it, but I watched it and kind of knew what it was, and I freaking loved it. And it brought me back to like childhood and all that stuff. And I know Tommy pretty well too. We've worked together. And that kid, which I didn't know was Machine Gun Kelly, I was like, God, he just did him perfectly, like right on. If you didn't know, you'd be like, oh, he's like kind of acting cheesy, but he was like dead on. I was so blown away how good he was too, you know?
Who is Machine Gun Kelly? He's an actor? What's his deal?
He's a rapper.
He's a rapper.
Actor, rapper. Yeah.
He's great. Yeah. I mean, that movie, the movie is retarded, and like, but it's great. And like, I wasn't like the biggest Motley Crue fan. Like,
oh, okay.
I liked Home Sweet Home when I was a kid. I liked Smoking in the Boys' Room. I was not a Motley Crue fan, but I was a total like Motley Crue Behind the Music fan. And then like, if I fucking, you know, I would be somebody that would talk shit about Motley Crue, but like the work that they had to do to get into that spot, it's like amazing. And that movie really captured a feeling. You're my age. You're 44, right?
Yes.
So like you were a kid at that point in LA. What was your life when Motley Crue was coming into fucking fame? Were you like Drew Barrymore and shit? Sneaking into clubs?
No, I was like, yeah, without the career. I was like, I was just so like attracted to that at such a young age, because it was like rebellious, outside, drug fueled, good time, that era, right? Thing. And I dug it, man. You know, I dug their music up until Nirvana came along, and then that changed the whole scene for everything. But it was really fun to watch, man. And I really did like their stuff kind of growing up, you know.
Oh man, I thought it was so fun. I came home from work at like 10 o'clock at night, and I was like, I'm gonna watch this, The Dirt. And I like brought food with me, and I sat, like I was like a fucking old man. I sat in a recliner with like a TV tray in front of me. It was like midnight. I had worked all day.
Dream.
My wife comes downstairs. She starts talking to me. I'm like, be quiet. I'm watching Motley Crue. It was like total.
I'm listening to Tommy Lee laws on how to live life. Be quiet.
Oh my God. I mean that, and that's like, for me, like that's like dopey dream right there. Like, but anyway, I'm going to go from something like funny to something not funny. The reason you were in Portland was because you were going to a retreat, right? A trauma retreat.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to take us down. See, my transitions are terrible. People are giving me shit about this all the time. They say my transitions
my
are bad.
My bipolar is worse. My bipolar is worse. Don't trip.
Okay.
No, and so I tell you what, you get to a certain place. Like, you know, I also suffered massively from the eating disorder, too, because bulimia and trying to be skinny and all that stuff. And it was like we were all kind of doing it because we were all artists and didn't know, you know. Like, I was like, oh, you mean because I was such a fat kid and my nickname was Fatly, until there were stories of my stepfather being gay, and then it was Fagly. But that's another story. But you know, just to like fit into trying to like get away from all that as you're getting older, so you're practicing all these behaviors that I didn't know. If I ate all the shit, then shot dope, I'm gonna throw up and it's perfect. I didn't know that's like the beginning stages of like bulimia. And it's hard, you know, as a man sometimes to open up that stuff, but that's just my truth.
Well, hold on. You're saying that you would do dope in order to vomit all the food, like to get high in order to vomit successfully in a bulimic style or whatever.
Let me rephrase that. I did dope because I love dope.
Yeah.
But a bonus was that. You know, so when I got clean for the first 5 years, I stopped the heroin, but I was still doing the bulimia without so like this is kind of sick, but anyway, so I would like, my thing was like pints of ice cream. Love pints of ice cream.
Yeah.
Tonight, you know
what was your favorite?
Uh, depends. You know, sometimes like mint chip, sometimes chocolate chip cookie dough. The sweeter, the better.
What brand, though? What was your brand?
I was eating a lot of Ben & Jerry's.
Okay.
And so I was so obsessed with, like, getting fat again that I would eat. So I learned this trick. If you eat, I don't even start sharing this, but if you eat whatever you want, but you eat ice cream in the beginning and middle of it, you don't need your fingers. You can just bend over. Weiland and I used to get so good at that, we'd be doing it at the car at the same time. Nobody else in the car would notice, you know, because you just get so quick at it. And so, you know...
Wait, so you would, like, you and Scott Weiland, would you throw up out the window?
Yeah, we'd be in a car, a bunch of people having a conversation, put down the window, look outside, and that would be it. You wouldn't even catch on, at least we didn't think anybody caught on. But it was pretty smooth. I could do it a lot of the time and nobody would notice.
Right.
You know. And I always said, first things I remember in life, the keys to the kingdom, which were first time I shot dope, first time in sobriety I learned how to throw up and get rid of the food with all the ice cream stuff, and the first time you have sex. That's of course third. So you think you have these, you know, outside solutions for these internal problems constantly. And so it got out of control around 5 years, mixed with a foot surgery and some Vicodin and that untreated bulimia, where I felt crazy and I couldn't stop, just like using and praying and be like, what's wrong with me? And so I finally relapsed on it and never really dealt with it, you know. So even though I was kind of in recovery, I was always in another active addiction.
You know, I went to a meeting today. I hadn't been to a meeting in a long time, and I went to a meeting this morning, and this girl was sharing something very similar. She was talking about how she lived a life of lies, you know what I mean? And then she tried to get, then she got clean, and she lied on her fourth step, or she lied on her fifth step. You know what I mean? She didn't include a bunch of shit in her fourth step, so she lied on her fifth step, and she said she basically threw away her recovery because she couldn't be honest in the fourth step. And it sounds like, I was going to ask you, like, what happened in those 5 years that shit changed, but it sounds like that's what it was. You kept the bulimia to yourself.
Yeah, it's very shameful, you know. It's very, very, very shameful. Like heroin, I was like, okay, there's tons of us here getting clean. You know, it's a Bob Forrest and I were talking about, and all the crew back then and stuff. But with that, it's not really talked about, even though a lot of people are participating in it. You know, so lots of times you're still in it. And so it just eventually got to a place where I would just, you know, bulimia kind of subsided, but it would be overeating and exercise bulimia, then just like overeating and sleeping all day, then depression's worse, can't get out of bed, just like when we're on dope. And then finally, like, well, fuck it. If I'm going to live like this, I know it's even better than this.
Right.
You know, because you get in so much pain again. And so eventually that happens. And I'd say I started dealing with it in the last couple of years. The last year has been like really dealing with it. So you always feel like you have an escape to go to. And sobriety, you know, okay, so in the beginning, it's great. You can do all that, you know, like shopping, gambling, women, whatever it is for you, you know, and then it gets to a point where this is causing so much more pain that there's no more relief. And that's like the place that I've become on, because that's so scary, because I've always had a back pocket answer for these things, you know. And so a lot of stuff has been like coming up that I don't know what to do with. And so I started going into the trauma thing. What really kind of changed my view on it is I saw the you know, Leaving Neverland. And like, you know, the acts that happened when there were kids, I really related to that and I wanted to turn it off. I'm like, okay, this is just too dark to help somebody and something. So I said, just watch the second part. And the second part was them as adults, how it affected their perception and their relationships with everybody in their life. And I was like, holy shit, that's me. You know, it's like that first time we go into, you know, a meeting and we hear somebody tell our story and how they use, like, oh my God, that's me. You know, and so, you know, we always know what to expect. Like, you relapse, you know, okay, I'm going to go get relief. I'm going to go to treatment, you know, and it'll be okay, meds and all this stuff. But with something like this, it's like terrifying. If you have PTSD or trauma, your relapse rate goes up by 285%.
Wow.
You know, and the doctor says to me, why do you keep going back? It's because of the pain. What a pain you're not addressing. You know, I feel like, okay, well, I've done inventories. I've looked at everybody's, you know, part, and they're sick, and they try the best they could. But it, when, like I said, when you're young, all it's just being formed, you have a real hard time getting close or trusting anybody, or hence leaving stuff out in your, you know, fourth step and being intimate because you're afraid that if you're too vulnerable that you're going to be taken advantage of again, you know?
Right.
And so
it prevents you from actually doing a proper fourth and fifth step, the trauma.
Yeah, and you don't even realize it. Because if you ask me about it, like, and I was just to say, oh, yeah, it happened, this, but it would just be like grocery list. Oh, two bad apples, three bad oranges, you know. But no connection. And when the guy said in the movie, in the documentary, Leaving Neverland, he goes, if I thought about those things happening to my daughter, just like I have a daughter, I would kill those people.
Right. Right.
I said, yeah, me too. And he goes, but when it comes to me, nothing. It's fine. I was like, wow, that's like, talk about blocked off and like self-worth and all kinds of stuff. Because I don't sometimes feel like we get to examine too much. We have to examine more. Maybe not just discard it so quick, you know? And so here's the thing. I don't think we've even talked about this. But so I went there and they said, listen, like with the level that you've had this, like, we can't help you. You need to go to inpatient for like a month in Kentucky. And I was like, holy shit. But the problem is I'm in a situation now where I either go back to the pain of where it's too much and I go back to the ultimate solution that I always go to. And I always had suicide and, you know, shooting dope as trump cards, no pun intended, in my back pocket, you know. And so when those all of a sudden are gone, you feel like the walls are closing in and this is, you're not going to be able to do this. And you start like losing it. Like I've never had like panic or any of that stuff. And lately that stuff's been coming up, but I leave Monday to go to this place in Kentucky for a month, and I'm terrified, man. I've never been so scared of anything in my life because there's nothing there to hide. I'm not like hanging out with the cool kids and treatment or whatever it is. There's like nothing. You can't even smoke there. So I started smoking again because I'm so stressful, but there's none of that there. No food, none of that stuff that, you know, the eating disorder stuff. You can't do that. And so it's just like, it's really the scariest freaking thing I've ever thought of in my life. And dude, I'll be honest with you, man, like I'm pretty emotionally cut off a lot of the time just because of all that stuff. But like that night and stuff, like I've been like breaking down and it's been terrifying, you know? And I guess it's just all the stuff that sometimes they talk about us not addressing, you know? And then I feel like, well, what's wrong with me? I'm doing all the right things, but yet there's something wrong, you know? We're not rocketing into the fourth dimension.
Right.
You know, and all this other stuff that they talk about. And then, you know, it's like the book's fantastic, but it says, you know, AA is but a spiritual kindergarten, and we also seek outside help. That's what God made these people for, you know? And so I go back and forth with the conflict of just being pure AA and this other stuff, and I realize, like, okay, I need more. Some of us do.
Well, you need whatever can help you. And I think I know you know this, but it's like in the past you know you put your head in the dirt or you get high or you act out or you do whatever, and this time you're totally seeking healing, you know. And that's a total shift in your behavior, you know.
But it's so scary because you can't equate it with anything, and so you don't even know.
What do you mean?
Possible.
What do you mean by that?
You just can't, like I said, like if you go into treatment, you know you're going to get meds, you know you're going to get this, like, you know, but this is something like that you've ran for your whole life and realize like everything you think is maybe off because of these things that happen, so your perception's off when you think it's like 100% sure what I say, I abide by, and then you start realizing maybe that's not the case, you know, maybe that's not true. It keeps you safe, but it's hurting you more than anything. So I'm so scared because now I don't have that to go to, and to go into a place where it's just just, it's like an emotional rehab, right? An emotional Baghdad. It's like, it's just scary. And I know, like, you know, and even in treatment, I always had it in my back pocket too. Well, I can bounce anytime I want, but the problem is I can bounce anytime I want, but where am I going back to, you know? And that's, when you get in that place, it's just scary. And maybe, you know, for some people, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And like, you know, I feel sometimes like shame too. And I feel like that some of the times I've relapsed after years of recovery because I'm in this place and everybody's like, oh, look how good he's doing. You should have him sponsor you, but dying inside. And, you know, even now I work in the field too, you know, part-time, and I feel like, oh my God, like...
Right, I don't have it together.
I'm a full fraud, right. You know, rather than going, okay, I'm doing what's the right thing to do, and maybe out of all this stuff, I will then be able to help people more in a way I never understood.
Well, you will. I mean, well, hold on, though, for a second. Because what we're talking about is sexual abuse, that you are the victim of sexual abuse.
Yes.
You know?
And physical, yes.
And physical abuse. And and when they send you to a program, and I, you know, I'm not fucking Dr. Phil or Oprah, and I'm not like, I don't really even know like the best way to ask questions about it. I just know that you're my friend, and I want you to do well, and I know that you deserve a good life. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I feel really good about all the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
What do they say that Kentucky is going to be like?
I don't know. You know, I just realized like why, you know, because we always say, oh yeah, we like to build everything up and tear it down, and I realized like it's not that I like that cycle. It's like that I'm so terrified and inside don't think I'm worth it that I have to tear it down. You know, and that's a really like tough place to be, because the more I think I've known as I've gotten older, the answers I've had, I've realized like, oh, I'm possibly wrong now. Oh, I am wrong. And it's just scary. So you don't know. I mean, you go in, there's no smoking. It's all the trauma and PTSD. And I didn't understand any of this stuff. I mean, I read some books lightly here and there, but not to this degree. And now I'm like seeing it, and it's terrifying, you know, like I'm terrified. So I pray and continue to move forward. But like, to be honest, it's like I wanted to go straight from Portland to there, but they didn't have a bed, so right. I had to get through it. Now it's just like every day, it's like, oh God, it's like
prelude, you know, to terror.
Like when you go into treatment, you're like, fuck it, let's get really high. You know?
Right.
And now it's like there's nothing, you know, and so. There are things, of course, I can make that choice, you know, and sometimes it does cross your mind, but I'm like, the pain of that and seeing people you actually care about because you're less selfish than what you were, and your daughter and people that love you, to see that look in their eyes, once again, just like, I can't do it, man. Like, I can't do that, you know, and I don't want to end on a tragic story because it's something my head keeps telling me constantly. So... it's just scary. I don't know what to expect. And I didn't want to, you know, to be honest with you, Dave, I didn't want to, like, start asking too many questions because my brain's the type that will build the way of not going. And
right.
I don't need it.
Like, I don't want to do this, and that's not going to help me, or whatever.
Yep.
You're going to create a story.
Yep. And then, like, then it goes to, well, what if it doesn't help me? Then it's over. Then I'm fucked. You know?
Right.
Like,
right. You have to let them help you. And then you also have to just really, really, really consider, like, what you're talking about, being a conduit. You know what I mean? Being somebody who can, you know, I mean, all this 12-step stuff really is about being of service, you know, being capable of it. And you're going to be one of the few people that can actually help somebody else, you know? And that's really meaningful. I mean, it sounds so fucking hokey, but it's everything.
Yeah, and I feel like I've been really great with helping people get early sobriety and the foundations and the fundamentals and putting in that place, you know, but like sometimes I would think, okay, that's just enough. Just get through another day without using today. Eventually I'll be okay. And it's just like, you feel like every day you're waking up and you're having to climb Mount Everest at a certain point. It swallows you up too much, you know? And so like, I realized like, okay, I have to like put the ego aside, which is killing me, because especially trauma, it's all Thomas is based now on ego, constantly trying to keep you alive, so you believe that so well. But then you start seeing how it's hurting you in your life and people around you in your life, and you're like, I don't know how much time we have left, man, the way we use and all that stuff.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. That's not up to me, but I want to start being able to really be free and liberated and not just have all this knowledge in my head.
Explain, though, the ego and trauma. I don't understand that. What does that mean?
So, yes, they're explaining, and don't quote me in this definition because I'm just learning it all. Oh, funny, Chuck just texted me, funny enough.
He just texted me, too. What did he text you?
That's so funny. It's going on a three-way. He'd love that. I don't know. I didn't even look. But they've been so supportive. It was great. So I'm sorry. What was your question?
Ego and trauma.
Yeah. So ego, you know, we always hear, like, you know, ego is not your amigo and stuff. We have to get rid of it.
I never heard that. Ego is not your amigo.
I guess it's a West Side thing.
Yeah. Must be a cholo thing. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, I don't want to say that because it might not be PC, you know.
It's all right.
But you know, so you know, you start to realize, like, the more honest you are with people around you, what's going on, you know, because there is that people-pleasing thing. You want not to scare anybody. The more love and the more open you can start to feel as who you are as a human being, you know. And my stuff was always about constantly going to all the outside stuff, because that would make it okay constantly, and then falling back even into that illusion again, because it's just so installed, that's the only way. And you really get to a point, you know, like, and that's the thing, man, like, I saw that doc, and I could have heard it a million times, just like AA program or recovery, that we hear a million times, and then one day it hits us, it's like profound. So I'm just going, I don't know what the full question was, because I'm getting like all...
That's okay. My question was, like, how, I guess, ego becomes a mask when dealing with trauma.
Yes, that was the question. So, like, so now I'm at, like, the jumping off point, right? Can't live with booze, can't live without it. But the ego takes over to constantly, like, ego thought. There's no real feelings who's blocking everything down to keep you alive. So, like, I have insomnia. I can't sleep pretty much my whole life, maybe a couple hours a night. That's why I said I was kind of tired today. And I started realizing, like, my, you know, we all have survival skills, like our you know, our midbrain and all that stuff, and our old brain that takes over for when bad things happen, right? That's something we have in us as humans. But when it never shuts off and it's always on, and, you know, you start realizing how tense everything is and how much you're holding in and how much it's affecting you because you're constantly in that fight or flight stage, it gets to be, like, just so overwhelming, and you start getting exhausted. And I just kept pushing because I was younger, and now I'm at an age where I can't keep pushing.
Right.
It hurts too much, and you get stuck where you're, like, faced to deal with this stuff, you know. So all you know, there's nothing to lose, only to gain. But then our heads go, well, if this isn't worth it, so then I'm screwed, then it's over, you know. But I have to trust the process and continue to do this a day at a time. But, man, it's scary, you know. Like, it's weird just us doing this on podcast, because, like, just really getting this real and honest, man. I'm like, I have to let, you know, a different part of the ego go too with all that stuff, because it's not about that. What we're doing here on these things is truth. We're all seeking truth, right? That's what brings us together, you know. And sometimes we get worried if you're going to be judged or this or that, and some things are just not for everybody. But your truth doesn't have to be for everybody. But I always felt like I had to fit in, you know, and I always could do that so well as a songwriter, to fit into whatever it was, whatever mold it was, because it was that constant, my trauma stuff, and never really knowing who I am, because just me alone with that other stuff is not good enough.
Well, the truth is, though, and I hate this kind of an expression, but, like, you've been through the fucking ringer. Like my friend Chris, who died, had been to, like, 15 treatments, and he fucking pushed himself hard. But, like, when I look at your stat sheet, like, the beginning of your book, you know, I'm going to read it here. It's two failed marriages, two failed careers, 32 rehabs, 5 overdoses, 3 flatlines, 2 comas, paralysis, brain surgery, spleen surgery, staph infection of the heart. apart, gang greed of the arms, drug deal shootout. And that doesn't mention fucking overeating and sexual trauma and bulimia. I mean, you've been through the fucking mill. And, I mean, you're brave enough and honest enough and stupid enough to come on my stupid podcast. And fucking, you're dealing with stuff. You know, it's like, it's really pretty amazing, Ashley. And I know people probably tell you that all the time, but it's pretty fucking amazing. And I'm very proud to know you. And I'm very proud of you. It's like an amazing thing, man. You should fucking, like, pat yourself on the goddamn back for a second, man. Stop beating yourself up. Come on.
No, man. No, I appreciate that. It means a lot, man, because I have a lot of care for you too, you know. So, and that's one of the reasons, like, I had offers for that book a few years back, but in my heart I felt like I wasn't ready yet,
cause right,
there was more to be told, you know. Even if I do that, I don't know, I'm just, you know, trying to do the next thing in front of me. So that's where the journey, you know, has taken me this far, you know.
Right. No, and I hear you.
I really want to be one of those guys who's like not just some grouchy old timer, but truly happy and allow yourself to be happy and enjoy life rather than looking at it as a curse. Because
happy, joyous, and free, you're talking about.
Yes, because you realize like how lucky you actually are, but because of these perceptions and these things and like never feeling like you amount to anything and just, you know, suicide always being the out card. You know, if it got too hard, that was always the one in my back pocket, you know, and now it's like, I don't want to do that, man. Like, I have a daughter I love, a family that I love, and I don't want to do that, you know, and so it's like that option's like off the table now, and that's scary too, you know, so.
Right. I mean, but, know, but like, to speak plainly, the option's never really off the table unless you really want to make a go at living. You know what I mean?
Yes. In 40 day, but I was always saying, okay, I need, you know, I'm not meds are great. I'm just saying, okay, I need this. Okay, this depression thing, this is not working. That's not working. You know, finally, this doctor said to me, man, it's like, it's not about that, man. It's about dealing with stuff. He's a psychiatrist. He's also a neuroscientist, went to Stanford, Harvard. So, and he's had some trauma stuff himself, so he really gets it. And he's like, that stuff can help, but it's not about that. And us addicts, or at least me, I always want the easy, quick fix, man. I want the quickest out, right? I want that instant gratification. You know, and so, like, the best antidepressant of all is heroin until it's not, you know.
Right, until
so,
it stops working, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other meds have great benefit for people, you know, and trying to regulate and getting sober and stuff. But when you keep jumping and thinking that's the only solution and it's not working, then you start realizing, like, okay, what's really going on, you know?
Right. And, like, the Kentucky thing sounds like it's hope. You know what I mean? Today I had this weird day today. My family's going to go on a trip to the Bahamas, okay? So I don't have a passport. You know, I had a passport when I was like 20 or something.
That's okay. I'm going to Martin Luther King for a lot of trip. Better vacation.
No, I don't have fucking shit. What do I need? What are you saying?
No, I'm just saying my head would always be like vacation and like, you know, Bahamas all paid expenses or like, you know, Martin Luther King delighted trip for 5 days.
Right, totally.
Not the end of the week. But sorry, what were you, go ahead.
No, so I don't have fucking, I don't have a passport. And I don't know where my birth certificate is. I moved into this house last May, and I just threw everything into these file cabinets, and I put the file cabinets in the attic. And today I started going through the file cabinets. And I found a bottle of Suboxone. I found, like, old bags of weed.
Oh, wow.
I found metal, you know those old dugouts that you smoke weed with? Like, they're like metal fake cigarettes. I don't know if they had them in the West Coast. In the East Coast, you, like, smoke these metal cigarettes with weed on the tip of them. They're called dugouts. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I found those full of bud. And the bud is like dust now. But it's like I'm seeing my old life in front of me. And, like, I wasn't tempted by any of it. And I was kind of just amazed that it was just sitting in my file cabinets. You know what I mean? It's like my past. I found all this weird writing. And, like, I don't know, man. My point is, like, I didn't have the traumas that you had. And I know that I just have faith that you can get better. And I also know that that you're going to be able to do a lot of good, you know, and it means something to me. You know what I mean? And you wouldn't be doing it if it didn't mean something to you, you know?
Of course. Of course. Yeah, there's nothing against my back. There's no, like, you know, judge. There's no, like, trying to get the heat off. It's just all because, you know, right, we said we were willing to go to any lengths when we started this thing. And I always have to recheck my statement. Am I willing to go to any lengths to improve, to move on to the next stage, right? And I always say you have to get, like, uncomfortable to get comfortable, but that's the continuing process through our lives, you know?
Well, that's the big difference, though. In the past, you always did something because you were pushed. Your back was against the wall for something. And this is the first time that you really will go to any lengths to be free, right?
Yeah.
So that's really meaningful, man.
No, it's true. I hope to have this conversation after I've been, because I'm like, I don't know, but there is hope. I mean, I do have hope, you know.
Well, unless Kentucky totally fails, then we wouldn't have that conversation afterwards if it didn't work.
I'm like, just held up in, like, a meth trailer with a few underage, like, Southern women.
Now we're talking. Then we can get to some serious dopey. So we invented this stupid game. You want to play a stupid game before you go?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
It's not a Naked Twister. We can't do that. We're not in person. Okay.
We can't really do it on the phone, and I don't think it would be as joyful as you might assume it would be.
Does it involve duct tape?
No. This game is called Ashley. This is my friend Sam wrote this, mostly, and it's called Ashley. Sam also helps produce the show. And he's a great, great help to me. They actually Sam is, he lives in Ventura, and he's constantly tan. And as when he grew up, they would call him the young George Hamilton. So
hilarious.
He takes an interest in you, Ashley, just so you know. So he has this game called Ashley Hamilton, This or That Questions, in a new segment we like to call Getting to Know Ashley Hamilton in 18 Questions. Okay. Now, these are just some really dumb questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Do you prefer and just answer as quickly or as long as you want. Do you prefer romantic comedies or porn?
Neither.
Okay. That's what I thought you'd say. Stupid Sam. Anyway, crack or powder cocaine?
Duh. Crack. Unless you're shooting the powder cocaine.
Right. Okay. Bong hits or joints?
Bong hits.
Yeah, me too. Cocktails or beer?
Not necessarily cocktails, but straight up.
Right, just drinking liquor out the bottle.
Yes.
Now, here's a question that's really important to me. Do you prefer cake or pie?
Cake.
And you prefer Ben and Jerry's to Haagen-Dazs?
No, I love Haagen-Dazs too, don't get me wrong.
Dude, my fucking shit is my favorite thing, and I would do this when I would shoot dope, is I would get a pint of vanilla chocolate chip ice cream and a pint of chocolate chip ice cream. And and my fucking shit is that vanilla chocolate chip. I could literally eat vanilla chocolate chip all day, and it would be...
You know what, that sounds like porn. It's like watching the Food Network and getting horny. That's the same.
I know, I'm a sick person. I really need to use the 12 steps on my fucking sugar addiction. By the way, I remember a few weeks ago you had said you were recommitting yourself to this no white sugar, no white flour. How's that coming?
Good so far.
How much time you got?
I guess it's been a few weeks now, but I had 7 months and then had a quick little... And now back to like a few weeks again.
And you're smoking cigarettes though, so fuck it, right? No, dude, do what you gotta do, man. I hear you.
I'm always gonna take like the worst option, you know.
All right, back to
this one can kill you. This one just might make you look bad. Okay, I'll take the kill.
Yeah, I'll take the death. I'll take the death before I'm fat. You know,
but you can't smoke there, so remember that's gone. That's off the table.
What are you gonna do? You're gonna fucking chew? What are you gonna do?
Well, No, you can't chew there. Then I was thinking, like, you know, my old dopey mentality, well, I'll just keister like a vape, you know, so I'll vape whatever. Well,
that's so funny, right?
And then I'm like, no, that's really dishonest too. So I won't do that. I'll just do it. They let you have Nicorette gum in the beginning.
They let you have Nicorette gum in the beginning. All right, that'll work. Should I keep going with this game, or do you want to give up on this game?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, Merle Haggard or Willie Nelson?
Merle Haggard.
Okay. Sex Pistols or The Clash?
I love the Pistols, man. Like, Clash, I love their songwriting, so that's a hard one.
See, I'm all The Clash. I'm all The Clash.
Okay, so I'm gonna go for Clash, because then I would have felt like I was being judged.
But do you know Steve Jones, by the way?
Very well. I was with him last night.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Dude, he's like, he avoids me like the plague.
Does he?
Can you just give him a good word on behalf of the show, please?
I will. I will.
Even though, like, sure. I prefer...
Tell him you asked the difference between cake and pie, he'll be in. He likes that stuff.
I'm all about cake, personally. What about you?
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
It gets the job done quicker, more of it.
Yeah, but I just like chocolate more than any sort of fruit filling.
I love chocolate cake. I also, some people hate this, but I love carrot cake too.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've even, I think I had like one piece of carrot cake in my life. Literally.
I like the really sugary kind. I also like the really like things, anything from like the Cheesecake Factory, like all the cheesecake cakes with all the gnarly stuff in it, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah. I like anything with Reese's Peanut Butter Cups in it. Anything.
Yeah.
All right, keep going. Do you prefer meditation or prayer?
I prefer meditation. It's harder, but yes.
Are you still doing TM?
Yep.
Daily?
Yep.
You know, I never got a mantra on the cheap. I didn't do anything. I never fucking did anything. What do?
I let you, and you didn't want to take it.
It's not that. I have a hard time getting certain things accomplished. Can you resend me that link, please?
Okay.
Thank you. Will you really?
Yeah.
You'll do it?
You want that link or a naked picture of me?
I want the link. I want the link, man.
Of course. I want to make that an easy option for you. I don't want to see me either. Go on.
I want the link.
Yeah, trust me.
Do you prefer...
Like a giant third grader or like a chubby kid in diapers want to have my underwear on. So go on.
No, that's what I want. I want the nude of you as a baby over the link. Do you have can you send me a baby nude over the link?
Not a baby nude, but I have like a 12-year-old one I'll send you.
I think you already sent me that one.
Okay.
So send me the link. I think that could fucking rocket me into some other dimension, frankly. Seriously.
Dude,
I'm in the cake dimension right now. As much as I want to...
The fourth dimension of cake.
Yeah, the fourth dimension is the cake dimension. The fifth dimension is like some TM stuff, transcendental meditation.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Do you prefer... I don't like the rest of these that much, Sam. Sam, you did good, though. I think this is pretty good.
Thank you, Sam.
He did a good job, right? Yeah. Oh, okay, here's a good one. Here's one. Do you prefer making a searching and fearless moral inventory or making direct amends to such people wherever possible? Which do you prefer?
Ooh, that's a freaking good one. I would get terrified. It's the hardest, but I love the ninth step.
Okay. And that's making the direct amends.
Yes.
Okay. For those who aren't as up on the steps, you know, I got a new sponsor today.
Whether you're not in the steps or not, it's a great thing to really like look through your past and see so many people that we've hated and hurt and realize that like we've done that ourselves to other people. You know, not like just thinking we're the victims of it sometimes. So it's fascinating to just try to. And some of that's very valid, but it's just something like, you know, like the St. Francis prayer, right? Like, better to forgive than, you know, be forgiven or whatever. That's how you start, right? By, like, forgiving. And that's a tough one for me I'm working on.
That's a beautiful sentiment, I have to say. Okay.
I just can't forgive the herpes, but, you know, I am grateful for the Valtrex. All right, next question.
McDonald's or Burger King?
McDonald's.
When's the last time you had McDonald's?
Probably 6 months.
I don't even remember the new thing is
they're the best fries.
Dude, the fries where I work are fucking sick. The fries,
really?
Dude, Dude, when's the last time you were in New York?
When I was doing a comedy spot on The View.
Oh, yeah. You tell me about that. Dude, why don't you pop up? You should pop up after Kentucky.
For sure. We'll just go on cake runs and all kind of runs.
Yeah. No, you should pop up after Kentucky, and you'll sit in on Dopey. You know, maybe at my dad's house, maybe on Long Island, and I'll take you down to Katz's, and I'll set you up. We'll fuck up your diet for a day, but it'll be cool. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm into it. Let's see if we can set up the schedule, for sure.
I would love that. Okay,
Surviving Dopey.
Yeah, I would. No, but like,
you got a treatment.
Dude, you're going to be close, you know? I mean, it's not the craziest thing I ever said, you know?
No, for sure. I'd love to actually see you.
Yeah, it would be fucking awesome. The other one, I mean, he has Wall Street Journal or People Magazine.
Yeah, neither.
Yeah. Helvetica or Times New Roman? Or New
know.
Times Roman. I'm a New Times Roman guy myself.
Can't tell the difference anymore. Well,
see, that's good. That's good. He said, now he really liked this one. Suntan or sunscreen?
Here we go. Neither of them. My dad doesn't believe in them.
What about you?
Yeah, the screener. I'm not a big like sun fan.
So you seem paler than the family than the family tan. And then
you are the black sheep, right? I'm like the white sheep.
That's funny. Yeah, you're the pale sheep of the family.
The pale sheep, yeah.
Okay, the last question, which is it was a heartless question from Sam, but he says George Hamilton or Rod Stewart.
That's a mean one, Sam.
I know.
It's a mean one.
He's not usually so mean.
You know, they were both parents, but of course my...
Your pops.
Real dad, he's got the best heart in the world, and I love him.
Yeah, no doubt. So thank you for playing this stupid game. Before we go, one other thing. What was it? Oh, right. Listen, what I really want you to do, I want you to tell Steve Jones to fucking come on Dopey, but I want you to do the Dopey song, and what I really want you to do for yourself is get in the bathroom with Steve Jones and do one of those jams with him.
Oh, we worked together. He on my first album on Elektra, he worked on and played guitar and wrote songs with me, and then...
You see his Instagram, though, when he does these vibrato bathroom jams?
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking killer. You should go over to the bathroom with him and play a tune.
Okay. Do I sing into this thing? I just blow on it.
You can blow on it. It's cool. No, I'm serious. Have you seen his tunes?
All gay references as we hang up this phone call.
Have you seen him do those things?
No, I haven't.
Dude, look at his Instagram account. He does these videos in the bathroom with musicians. He's got this tiny amp, and he does these incredible vibrato numbers. It's just, you should fucking get in the bathroom with Steve and play if you can. I just, you know, it's my dream. So if you can live that dream.
They're phenomenal musicians. I'm like, I just get by. Well, write some songs here and there.
Well, don't put yourself down, and don't, and thank you, a million thank yous, and you're gonna leave on Monday.
I am, yes.
And maybe you'll come to New York afterwards.
Yes, for sure, and maybe we can do a check-in or whatever, man, but you know, I always, online, offline, we always talk, man, and I love and care about you, and you're somebody I connected to, and consider someone I can trust in my life, so thank you for that, you know?
Yeah, man, thank you. And anytime, you know, anytime whatsoever. You know?
Insert joke here, but I can't think of one.
Huh? What did you say?
I said insert joke here.
Right.
I can't think of one.
No need. I'm serious. You know, anything I can ever do. And send my best to Colby too. And fucking enjoy, and don't be scared about Kentucky, it'll all be good.
Yep.
All right?
It will.
Good. All right, bud.
It will. All right, man. I love you, man. Thank you.
Love you too, Ashley. Thank you so much.
Talk a little bit.
Yeah, right on.
All right.
Later.
Bye.
So that's cool. Ashley Hamilton back on the show. It's very weird that I've become friends with Ashley Hamilton through the show, but it's very cool. I like Ashley a lot. I'm really happy he came on the show. He's obviously going through some serious, serious stuff. So we definitely wish him the best in Kentucky, and I can't wait to have him back on and hear how he's doing. Trauma is is obviously a terrible, terrible thing to go through. And it's a real hotspot with addiction, you know, dealing with addiction with trauma is like a very, very sticky, sticky thing. So we're hoping Ashley gets some real serious help in Kentucky, and I can't wait to have him come on. And frankly, selfishly, I just want to have him come on to tell some Rod Stewart stories because I'm a big Faces fan. I'm a big Rod Stewart fan, maybe even more than Ashley. But that we will find out, and of course, we wish him the best. Super happy, obviously, to be clean and sober still. I had a very, very bad week last week, and I didn't go to a meeting, and I went to a couple meetings this week. For all you fucking meeting makers out there, I was all fucked up and I went to some meetings and I feel better. And for all you people who think I'm, you know, who don't, you know, like meetings, you know, more power to you. But it's good. It's good for me. I actually think I'm getting a new sponsor and I'm about to start redoing my steps because why not? You know, I need to get a little spiritual tune up for the spring. And I'm not a big podcast listener. I'm obviously a big podcast guy because I make a podcast, but I'm not a big podcast listener. But I found my favorite podcast besides Dopey, because I am a home team Dopey guy. I love Dopey. But my favorite podcast, I think I might like it more than Dopey, to be honest with you. It's called Stay Free, and it's the story of The Clash. And it's narrated by Chuck D from Public Enemy, which is a weird choice. But he's doing a pretty good job, and I love The Clash. And I actually like I used to read these Beatle books by a guy named Philip Norman. He wrote these amazing biographies on John Lennon and Paul McCartney. They're huge, but they're really good. And when I would read them, all I could think is, I want to hear the music while I hear the story. And even more than that, I want to see the videos. I want to see pictures while I'm hearing the story. And with the Clash, Stay Free, you get this story of The Clash and you get the music at the same time. And this week is, I forgot what the episode is called, but it's the episode where they make London Calling. So you have all of the songs from London Calling and you get the stories about how they make it. And I think like, you know, I don't know who's listening to podcasts, but you got to think that there are some kids. I mean, it's not true. You know, it's just middle-aged men like me listening to it. But you got to hope there are some kids that are listening to it that want to go start a great band and play. It just makes me want to start a great band and play. But I'm too old. I'm washed up. Dopey is my great band, you know, and I'm very, very, very happy to have it. It's my favorite. But what it really reminds me of is when me and Chris, like I was really, really excited to record an episode with Chris about our regrets. And I had like obviously a million regrets, but one of my biggest regrets was not being better at guitar and singing and writing songs at a younger age. So I couldn't have the real experience that Joe Strummer and Mick Jones and Paul Simonim, however you say his name, had. And you listen to that fucking show and it's just like it is so exciting to imagine being there. And how excited Joe Strummer and Mick Jones were to make those records and Paul Synonym or Simonim, however you say his name. And then I remember Chris was like, Chris didn't have any regrets, which was just like classic fucking Chris. So here we go. Dopey email. It says, my love for Dopey, The Wire, Sopranos, two Dopey stories. And here's a little bit of Dopey. Hey, Dave, gonna stay anonymous. Just call me Pete. Great job on the show. I'm a longtime listener. I've heard the majority of the episodes multiple times. I really love hearing all the fucked up, depraved shit. It really takes me back in a positive way and helps create moments of gratitude in my life when I'm on the go and can't make meetings. I'm 27. I've been sober for 7 years. It's amazing. I relate to you quite a bit as I'm a recovering IV dope user that's found a home in AA. I recently became a homeowner. I have a successful career in marketing and production. You should work for Dopey, Pete. You should get to work. I've got a 5-year-old little girl with another little girl on the way. Wow, we do have a lot in common. And I've also just finished rewatching The Wire and The Sopranos again and waiting for Game of Thrones to come back. Me too, man. I'm actually watching Mad Men again right now. Anyway, I've got a few shitty stories, but here's two to start with. I hope you get a laugh from reading. If you like them enough to share, but the emails are too long, let me know and I'll try to cut them down to a show-length voice memo. Now, this is a fine length, Pete. Everyone pay attention. This is a pretty good email length. Here's his first story, the graduation package. I've got to lay down some backstory on the one so all of the context is as funny as possible. I'm 17 when this took place. I've already dropped out of high school at this point and 2 years into a solid daily IV coke dope habit. I was living in my 80-year-old grandparents' basement doing nothing with a pet rat, just a total shit junkie. I recently had talked a guy I knew into fronting me around $1,000 worth of dope to sell. Long story short, I did all the dope in a few days and ended up in a pretty bad spot in debt to my main guy that controlled most of the dope in my area, while also being out of dope and money. I then did what any good junkie would do and developed a get-dope-quick scheme. I came up with an extremely elaborate lie regarding my upcoming graduation, along with an itemized list of expenses, cap and gown, shoes, graduation fee, etc., around $1,500 that I needed cash for now/today. This was enough to pay my debt and also get well. Keep in mind that I've dropped out of school at this point. I've been out of school all year, but I've maintained this lie by leaving to cop every day in the morning and not being around during the day. I managed to get past all of the normal objections and questions any sane person would have in a situation like this. Like, why do you need this cash right now? When is the graduation ceremony? Why can't we just write a check to the school? My response was, they didn't get me the information until today. It's the last day or I can't graduate. They must have missed me. They can only accept cash at this point. I had closed the deal. My only requirement was that I produced an itemized receipt from the school by the end of the day. I got the money, I got the dope, I got well, and I typed out a janky bullshit itemized receipt on an old accounting calculator I bought at a pawn shop that I presented a few days later. Obviously, my family was not totally fucking ignorant. They knew I was bullshit, but they loved me and had a serious issue with enabling. No big fireworks at the end of this one, just fucked up how deep we're willing to go with the lies and manipulation. Thanks, Pete, for the email. He actually had two stories. The other one is guns, dope, and sleeping at red lights, but we're going to save that one for another night. Thank you for the email. Good luck with the baby. Congratulations on your time in recovery. This should be an inspiration to all you Dopey Nation people to get writing. Send in a nice dopey story. I would love to read it. Anyway, I'm also going to play a voicemail. This is a pretty classic, dopey voicemail from a longtime listener, Elizabeth.
Hey, Dave. Dopey Nation. My name is Liz. I'm from upstate New York, Catskill area. I've been listening to the show from the very beginning. I just celebrated my two-year anniversary. Been using drugs for a long time. Started when I was 15. I'm 33 now. It's my longest period of sobriety. You know, I've done it all. But I've wanted to call in for a long time. I have a ton of debaucherous stories. I was dumbfounded from the news of Chris. Horrible. You know, really hit me hard. But anyway, I wanted to call in and, you know, share some, put some dopey on you guys. It's hard to choose a story. I'm in the medical profession, so I have a lot of crazy ones. I'm going to tell this one from when I was, I think I was in college. It's, you know, hard to remember. Everything's a blur from that period of my life. My aunt had gotten me a job at Dunkin' Donuts. I must have been like 19 years old. And, you know, I was out with friends the night before I had to go into work. And, you know, I always try to be responsible. I just really love to get high. And, you know, we were up partying all night. God knows what I took. Back then, Oxycontin was life. And I had a really bad benzo problem. So from what I remember, we had been eating pills all night. I think I blacked out after the sixth Danny bar. And I must have been telling my friends that I needed to go to work. And my friends, being the assholes that they are, decided to bring me. Now, I'm completely blacked out. And they take me to work. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I haven't slept. And I've completely blacked out. unbeknownst to me, when I finally woke up, snapped out of it, standing in my uniform and frosting all over me, my face, my outfit. And I'm, you know, I used to actually make the donuts. So I'm in the back, obviously, because it wouldn't, I don't even know if I was in the front. And I look over and my manager's like, yeah, I fired you about 2 hours ago, but you won't leave. And I was like, oh my God. She told me I had been walking into walls. You know, I had frosting all over my face. I was mortified. Don't even know how I got there. No recollection of being anything. And, yeah, I think the only reason she didn't call the cops is because, you know, my aunt got me the job. So, not one of my finer moments. I ended up calling my friend because my car wasn't there. And, you know, like, you fucking asshole, come pick me up. And he just thought it was the funniest thing. And whatever, I got fired. But, you know, it escalated from there through the years. It took me some pretty bad consequences to finally get sober. And, you know, hopefully this time it sticks, because I just know that, you know, if I relapse, I'm gonna die. So, yeah, I hope you guys like the story. And, yeah, stay strong, Dope Nation. Toodles.
So thank you, Liz, for the voicemail. And obviously send in voicemails and send in emails. Send in reviews. I've got some really, really good reviews. But before we do any reviews, I just want to talk about something that's very serious and really terrible. You know, one of the more terrible things I've ever heard since we started doing the show. And of course, the show has been marred with a lot of terrible, terrible things. And this one is, I've told this story more times than I can remember, but I'm going to tell it again because it's important. When Chris and I started doing the show, he brought a buddy of his, named Dave Marshall, around. And it was funny because Chris would always say, there are very few heroin addicts who can use successfully. And he would always cite Dave Marshall as one that could use successfully. And by the time I had met Dave Marshall, he wasn't using successfully. He was struggling with heroin, and he was really into Dopey. And Dave Marshall was a one in a million kind of guy. He was incredibly handsome. He was incredibly ambitious, and he was literally the most in shape person I had ever met. He owned a CrossFit gym in rural Connecticut, and he was a guitar player. He on Instagram, he would either have videos of himself pulling like 500-pound sleds in his gym, or videos of him playing these, you know, psychedelic, lonely guitar solos in his room. He was a really nice guy. I talked to him on the phone a bunch, and he stayed at my house once, and you know, he met me at the restaurant a couple times, and he had actually set up our Dopey Podcast Facebook page, and his sister had done some Dopey logos for us, and I would say within a year of all that stuff, he wound up overdosing and dying. And when I found out, I was just sick over it. Chris, I remember we were in the apartment where I used to live with Linda, and Chris texted me that Dave had died and my stomach dropped out. And that was really the first major death that I had dealt with. And I had obviously been a heroin addict for a long time, and I had known a few people that died, but I wasn't really friends with any. And Dave dying was incredibly painful for me. Anyway, I had been kind of in touch with his father. And his father wrote this book called The Horse Rode Me. And it's a story, it's a novel about Dave's life. And the father, Bill Marshall, wrote it in Dave's voice. And I just bought a copy and I was about to have him on the show when I saw that Bill's other son, Tyler, who was, I think, 42 years old, also overdosed and died. And he actually, I met Bill once at Dave's funeral, and you know, it was incredibly sad and terrifying. And it was in rural Connecticut, and there was a line all the way down the street. There was a very long line to get in, and I went with Chris. I drove from Long Island to this town in Connecticut near the casinos. I don't even remember the name of the town. It was far out though, and me, Chris, and a couple guys that I knew from treatment and that Chris knew from treatment went to lunch and talked about Dave. And I can't imagine what Bill is going through. Just, I can't even imagine. It seems like an impossible thing. I knew how much David really admired Bill, and I never had a chance to tell Bill, but David would talk about Bill all the time and tell me what an amazing athlete his father was and what amazing writer his father was. So my heart just goes out to Bill and their family. His name is Bill Marshall. I'm sure you can find him on Facebook. His book is called The Horse Rode Me. And it's really just another way to carry the message of, you know, how I love Dopey to be fun. You know, I love old stupid drug stories. I think they're funny. I think the stories are really funny. I think when I tell a story about seizing on a plane and getting wheeled off, it's funny. And even Chris's stories are still funny to me. But the truth is that this drug kills everybody, kills our friends, and it leaves people like Bill fucking decimated. It leaves me still decimated from my friends being gone. Todd's family decimated, Chris's family decimated, all of your friends, you know, it's repulsive. And you guys obviously know that, but this is fresh. So if you guys have any nice words to say to Bill, you should say them to him. And, if you're using, I would seek help immediately. Go to Aloe, go to detox, go to a meeting, fucking take care of yourself, do your best. Before we go, I want to thank Ashley for coming on the show, Ashley Hamilton. I want to thank Rocker T in the front of the show with the Dopey Podcast song. That Dopey Podcast song is literally always in my head. Rocker T, great reggae artist in California. Check him out. I want to thank Aloe. I want to thank Liz. I want to thank Pete for the email. You know, write reviews. Chris always loved reviews. I love reviews. Keep your fucking heads up. And as morbid as this sounds, if you're using, if you're a heroin addict and you're using drugs, there's a great chance you're going to use heroin. And if you're using heroin, there's a great chance you're going to get fentanyl, and there's a great chance you're going to die. I feel a little bit Pollyanna-ish saying it, but it's like, I cannot believe the numbers of people that are dying. So try to keep that fresh in your mind that your last shot could really be the last thing that you ever do. And then on the other side, you know, getting sober could be the greatest thing you ever did. I hate all this kind of stuff, but I just need it to be clear that I was a drug addict for many, many years. You know, all the drugs I did, I probably did drugs for, you know, over 20 years, and I managed to get off of them, and I managed to enjoy my life. You know, in some miraculous fucking turn of events, I managed to become an adult who enjoys being sober. So I'm just telling you it's possible. I'm not telling you what you have to do. You can do whatever you want. It's just possible. So with all that, stay strong, Dopey Nation, and fucking toodles for Chris and Todd and Dave and Andrew and Tyler and Troy and Scott and anybody else who died from this, from drugs. And take care of yourselves.
I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder would it do me any good? Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And I want to take a ride up in the sky. Watch as airplanes just pass me by. And I want to see a Lear jetliner take a dive. Just to show all of these people what it means to be alive. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. Shadows getting smaller and smaller, and it's time to where I stand. Shadows getting smaller and smaller, and it's time to where I stand. And I wonder would they pay it any mind? busted city far behind. I'll take the high road, however far it winds, because peace and love are very, very, very hard to find. And I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be good so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. Damn it, all these suckers make me mad. And it's all I ever had. And it's all I ever had. And these suckers make me mad, and I want to call my dad. And it's all I ever had. 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 And these suckers make me mad. And it's all I ever had. And I want to call my dad. And it's all I ever had. And it's all I ever had.